research is about being more structured than our mind naturally tend to be when we try to get to conclusion and when we try to observe things in the world around us. But it's also based on some kind of a research question that we phrase. We should try to do research on something specific, and this something specific can be rooted in what others have done research on before us, or it can be rooted in other experiences, or it can be rooted in a task we are given in some way. And you will experience all this, or may experience different levels of this. You may have ideas on your own of research to do. You may have get your ideas from a supervisor. And you may, or you may, have read literature that gives you ideas on what to do, or you may experience something in real life that takes you into the area of research that you're going to do. But the thing is, you try to do it in a structured way. So we formalize some kind of a structured approach to things, describe a way to get an answer on a given topic, describe a way to actually perform the process of getting there, and you analyze data in a structured way, and you base this on knowledge and theory. So it's not just your ideas that should come out here. It should be based on the knowledge that exists out in the world. Let me just do a little bit of skipping again. So what are good science? You will find a number of different systematizations of that. Different lists or drawings. I have included in these handouts this time, or in the slides that's up here, a number of these explanations that uses, they have a different number of bullet points or numbers. They can be in a graphical form. But they have a lot of things in common. So most descriptions of the scientific project seems to be based on a common idea of how this should be. So I have included a few of these lists where I haven't got the sources of all of them. You can find this also in the course book, examples of this. When you do searches on the net, you will find similar systematizations of what science is. And one core thing there has to do with the replicability of stuff. The transparency, that you do things in a way that makes it possible for others to say or to evaluate whether your conclusions are good conclusions and justified conclusions. Or do you just base this on limited, narrow knowledge, for instance? So people actually can redo what you do. Another term that tend to come up when you talk about science is that it should be, at some level, generalizable. It should be possible to take the knowledge in the research or in the scientific writing that you do and transfer it into some general area. There are always different levels of this. Some research can easily be transferred out in a larger context. Something is more difficult. it says that good science should be logical and theory-based, just getting to a surprise conclusion, a surprise finding without having any clues on what causes the effects that you see, is usually not very good. So being able, even if you are wrong, even if you are proven wrong later, to actually base things on a logical chain of thoughts and to say that something causes something else is better than just showing the result. Because at least then you show one possible explanation, and that can again be discussed and analyzed and criticized by others. And they may come up with other explanations and may have ideas on other approaches to get an answer to this problem. A typical thing, let's just try an example, more or less on the fly. Kids that watch a lot of violence or play a lot of violent games show more aggression. Let's say this is an observation we do. Show more aggression than kids who don't play violent video games. When you have made such an observation, you also have to make some kind of an intermediate theory of what causes what here. What is the chain of what is the cause? Is it just watching video games or playing video games that causes more aggression? And why is it so? Well, you have to state this, and then it can be challenged by others. And statements like this can, of course, be challenged. And it can be nuances to it, and maybe I'll try to get back to this example later. But you have to have some theory behind things. For instance, you may have a theory that it is people that are prone to violence or that are encouraged by it that become addict players or that actually plays more video games, and that's the result. But you have to say something about this relationship. It's not enough to have just an observation if you can't explain it. A thing that we will face in a lot of the project that you will be involved in or that you will propose to do early in your process of writing a master thesis is too much ambition. And that's not good research either. If you aim too high, if you aim at solving a complicated question that nobody has been able to solve before you in the some 100 years of scientific conduct, well, we don't expect you to do it either. So taking things or ground things in something that's doable also make research good. Okay, you can state a very broad picture. He says, my aim is to make Norwegians more happy, or something like that. But you have to limit yourself to something that's actually solvable in that context. Well, I'll make this little thing and make people a little bit happier, or make a little group of people a little bit happier, or something like that. Then it's doable. And then others maybe can try to generalize this to a broader context. Good science is somewhat circular. It's always based on questions, and it raises new questions. So being able to communicate the limitations of your own research is also a very good factor in making research as a positive and a good thing. In line with this, the formulation is incremental also comes in, because it tends to, we want you to base things on existing problems, on existing questions that are raised in existing research, but it should add a little level. It should add a little bit to what was there before. And when you add a little bit to what was a solid fundament before, well, then you have created good science. And then the last part, something I've thrown in here, or I've not thrown in it in here, but I tend to like this list because it adds this point. And that has to do with the ethical considerations of what you do. You should show social responsibility in your research. As from my field, it has been popular now and then to make rather small differences among groups of people, among people from different cultures, among genders. Small differences that actually don't mean much in practical life into important differences. Let's say you make a test you expect, like take this Wason's test of card sorting. We can see here that a lot of you comes up with or let's say the general thing here is that 30% or something comes up with a correct answer on a task like this. Actually, it's fewer, but let's just give it a random somewhat reasonable number. 30% in the general population we see here comes to a conclusion, or the correct conclusion. 40% of the girls gets to the right conclusion. Only 25% of the boys gets to the right conclusion. Okay, there seems to be somewhat a difference here. Well, try to cut the numbers down. We are a class of, now we are 35 people here, something like that, 35, a bit more than that. So this difference we see may be one or two persons. So it's highly likely that this is just a coincidence. So based on this, can we say that females are better problem solver than males? Depending on what group we're part of, we will probably agree to this. But in general, no, we can't do that. There are a lot of uncertainties here. But what we tend to see in press, for instance, when we communicate research, when we communicate these tiny differences with a lot of uncertainties connected with them, even small differences tend to be blown out of proportions if you read a newspaper. So the later you're born in the year, the later you learn to read and write in class or in school, or the worse a reader and the lower general grades you get during most of your active life as a pupil. Yes, that's true. But the differences are extremely small. So you can't say that one child that's born late in a year will become will have lower grades than any individual you pick that's born early in the year. Because the overlap between these groups are so huge, and the same thing goes with gender differences. The two populations vary so much that most people will be somewhere in the middle anyway. So you can't point back to any single girl, a single male from one population compared to a male from another population and say that she will perform like this. There is no such link. So being aware of how we communicate these uncertainties and shortcomings in our research is a vital thing in good research. Let's hope that one goes back now. Okay, we're back. So being aware of the social ethical consequences of the results we communicate is something I highly suggest that you include when you talk about and when you think about ethically good research. So you're not above this part of it's no longer the scientist in his white coat that has the correct answers to all questions. There are always uncertainties. And how to communicate uncertainties and how to interpret them is something that we'll get back to and something that you will deal with when we do actually statistical analysis of data that you gather. Because what you're going to do in your science project is that you will put up a research question, something you want an answer on, and you will try to get that answer, but you will also see the uncertainties that's connected to the results that you get. So I've just included a few more of these slides here that just gives you more of the same stuff in different versions. It should be repeatable. It should be transparent and repeatable. It should be based on knowledge, and it should result in encouragements to others to really take this further, or for yourself to take this further. And it should be put in an ethically, morally sound context. So it's a cyclical thing, but it's also within a larger circle of society, general knowledge in the world. So, okay, this is science, I say, but I'm not going to do that, am I? I'm just going to make this cool new product, this cool game-changing software that will make me rich and the rest of the world happy. Something like that. That's probably a bit too ambitious, but you will do something that's funny to do. Can I do that? Can that be science? Absolutely. You can do this. This can be a master thesis. This can be a research project. No problem. But you have to put it into some context. You have to reflect. You have to see what others have thought about this before. You have to put it in a context where you say, why is it important? Why have others failed to do this before? What did they do wrong? And for whom does it work? Does it work for all? Is it a general thing or is it a limited thing? Did you, in your group of test users of this super cool new software, find somebody that actually weren't able to use it and found it to be more cumbersome to use than old systems? Well, maybe that's the case. So there are limitations. And on the way, you may discover that you yourself had to do some shortcuts because of practical reasons, because of limitations you saw in the problem in the general context. So describing these things is then what you will have to do. So even though you're not going to do what we are proposing or what I'm proposing here, to conduct clear-cut science, experiments, stuff like that, you still have to work within a scientific context and do things in a scientifically good way. So the point is, don't just do it. Reflect on why you do it and how you do it and what the outcome of this is. We are, well, there are definitely limits to what we're going to focus on in the course we're having here now. Because research is a lot more than the stuff we are mainly going to talk about here. It can be in different contexts, it can be done in different ways. And all of this can be good research. You will see that we are mainly going to focus on the part up here. A lot of the, because that's cleanest, it's simplest to talk about. It's most straightforward to talk about. And that is the strictly empirical research that has somewhat to do with numbers, not necessarily analysis, but numbers, where we state a hypothesis. A hypothesis is a guess of an outcome, where we test this hypothesis. We tend to be in empirical research quite reductional. We try to isolate the problem into smaller chunks of problems that we solve so that we can give separate answers to all the different small problems. As it says, it's empirical. In this case, meaning that we actually experiment, we do something, we test things out. In this, it also comes that it's usually quantitative. It has to do with numbers and not qualitative, that it has to do with the analysis and understanding of things. So this is the area that we will focus on here. But research is a lot wider than this. There are different schools of research. There are different things you will be involved in with here as well. You can say that you have, for instance, as an example, this is not a complete list by no means. This can be arranged in different ways. But you can have the, for instance, that something quite different from the empirical research, which is the constructivist school of research, that there's a lot more analysis and qualitatively approaches things. They try to analyze things, discuss it with people, describes and explain things. Maybe the whys, what motivates people, not how much are they motivated, which would be the empirical approach, but what motivates, and why does it motivate? Why does different gaming strategies in games motivate different people? It's very difficult to find out these things, for instance, doing very detailed empirical research where numbers is your only focus, because then you would not have to know what you're going to measure. In a constructivist approach, you are more focusing on what is it important here? What is important here to focus on? You can state an advocacy or what we can call an action research thing, where the researcher is more part of a system than anything else. You try to change something. You try to make a more equal society for all genders, and there may be many I've heard now. And you do that by taking part in the system yourself. You try to change things and see whether that actually leads to changed attitudes in the general society or something like that. And that's more politically linked, of course, because you usually have a goal that's stated in some kind of an idealistic or political goal you have. And you have all sorts of in-between things, more pragmatically oriented things, where you take a little from this and a little from that. A typical approach is to have a little bit of qualitative pragmatist or constructivist approach in the beginning, trying to analyze things, try to understand what we should measure, and then you actually measure it later. So there are stages in this. Another thing that limitation in what we're doing here is that we will mainly focus on experimental methods. A lot of the, again, because this is the most clean-cut situation where there is a clean-cut use of terminologies. Where we will look at how we can use experimentation or experimental approaches to answer a research question and state a hypothesis and test this hypothesis. While, on the other hand, there are a lot of other methods out there, and we will touch some of it, at least we will touch some of it that has to do with descriptive methodologies, where you rather than test out things, just describe things. That can be done based on historical work, for instance. A lot of interesting stuff in informatics over the last few years has been to look at how the communication change that's been very rapid has changed our way of thinking. Basing this on historical available data, how did people communicate before, how many did they communicate with, how many friends did they have, have any of these things changed with the rapid changes in communication technology? You have all different sorts of research approaches, but the important thing is that most of this is, or a lot of this can be good research. Even though we are focusing for the for this course mainly on a very limited view into the huge field of research, so we are mainly a lot of my examples has to do with experimental methods, and it has to do with experimental methods that involve people. Most of you are going to do stuff that doesn't involve people. You're going to test out algorithms and data and how different algorithms perform differently and stuff like that, which is another approach, but where you use some of the same terminologies and same ideas as goes for research in general. So, I pushed in a lot of... I've learned once by a colleague that talking about theoretical themes in more than 15 minutes is highly impractical or counterproductive, because you tend to fall out. So maybe we can do something else. Just an example again on how bad we are or how good we are, and on what situations where... is it that we actually are able to perform reasonably good. I'm not sure if you have, some of you have seen this, so don't look at this, but there is, I'm going to give you a pretty straightforward task here, an observational task. There are two teams here that plays... I'm not sure whether this will work or not on the screen as it is now. We'll try it. It's a simple observational task. You have a straightforward situation here. You have two teams, a white team and a black team, and they're passing, each team has a basketball, and they're passing this ball between them. Right? And your task is to count how many times the players that wears white t-shirts passes the ball here. So that's your task. Okay. Any answers? 15? Huh? 17? Okay, you can get an answer here, I think. So some of you were right. But did you see anything else that was kind of strange there? Did everybody see the gorilla? You've probably seen it before. No? Yeah, because all of you have seen it before, and a lot of you have seen examples of this or similar things. It was quite a striking thing that Daniel Simmons showed. It's called inattentive blindness. You only see what you want to see. You tend to see what you're after here. And that goes back to the hypothesis thing. Because if we play this further, you will see that in the middle of this session, not all of you saw it. In a huge chunk of information, a gorilla comes in, striking his... Is it really... if you look at this in an objective way, this is absolutely the most striking thing that happened in this video, right? It's absolutely the biggest thing that happened. So, this is serious as well. Because what does it say about drawing conclusions when we observe things, when we gather data? Well, it really tells us that we can't trust our ability to be extremely good observers of the world. Don't worry, if you didn't see it, the normal thing to do when they gathered data on this, the first occasions, was that only some 20-30% saw the gorilla. So if you're not being prepared for this, and if you haven't seen this before, my best guess would be that you didn't see it now either. So it's a normal thing. Next time you see the video, you will be able to see it. And this is really important for the... some of you may be... I'm not sure if we have anyone with us now, but this... there's supposed to be somebody with police background, for instance, in joining these classes. And they're probably quite aware of this problem. Because once you get an hypothesis, once you start observing something, that's what you see. When you're part of a system, and when you start getting a hypothesis of what you're going to see, and when you start looking at something, well, that's what you see. You don't see the alternatives. Well, it's obvious that you didn't see the number of passes the black team did there, but that you didn't see something as obvious as this is really scary, right? Okay. That was maybe a sidestep, but also helping things a little bit, maybe. From a long chunk of theoretical information. Yeah. Are you special, Mark? Oh, yeah. We'll get back to some of these things later, but let's just start with some challenges that we have in research, and we'll... I'll give you a little bit of a task here now. that you can take into the next lecture. Because part of, I'll maybe go back to the more theoretical part of this. Being able to operationalize, being able to put context into something that is, we say, possible to do research on, and possible to make it replicable to others based on. Well, we need to operationalize concepts. We need to actually be very specific when we are trying to investigate things, or when we're trying to check relationship between variables, for instance. We'll get all the back to the variable term. Let's have a statement like this. Lillehammer, well, the Olympics in Lillehammer 94 made people in this region more happy. Well, let's overstate that as a question. Did it make people more happy? This is really difficult to do straightforward research on, because you need to be very specific on the terms. What do we mean by, well, you can try it yourself, which terms are fuzzy here? There are several. Let me just give you one. Happy. That's the most obvious one. What do we mean by happiness? So in able to answer this question, we need to be specific on defining what do we mean by happiness in this context. The number of smiles expressed on a given day at a given place or something like that. It could be that. It could be a more peer thing, the how happy you believe people in your neighbors are after the Olympics took place. It could be the number of children, for all I know, that were born 9 months later or something like that. Or that was probably inappropriate. Measuring happiness is extremely difficult. But when you state that, well, we have measured it this way. For instance, we have counted the number of smiles in a street at Lillehammer 1 week before and 1 week after the Olympics took place. Well, then at least we have something we can measure. And then people can debate whether that has to do with happiness, or it has to do with economic wealth, or if it has to do with being that it, or the case, the fact that it's finally over, or whatever. That's something that you can debate. But at least then you have been specific. By happiness, I mean. So being able to specify things like this, operationalized variables, is a key concept to doing good research. In this statement are the more difficult things. Yeah? People, yeah. Who are these people? Do we mean all people? Do we mean those who took part in the arrangement? Do we mean males, females? I don't know. Could be important to say something about, or is probably important to say something about. You have another one. Region, for instance. What we mean by region. Maybe those in Lillehammer were happy, while those in Hamar or whatever were depressed because they didn't get the attention. I don't know. The thing here is that enable to actually approach something like this, you need to be good at narrowing things down. This all comes down to being reductionistic and trying to focus on something to be able to give a proper answer in a context. Yeah? Yeah. C
Si det på norsk, du.
Ja, ja, ja. Yeah, what it says is that there was a comment from born in the police here, and with the police education, he says that yes, this is something we are very aware of. They call it witness psychology, and they have a lot of focus on this because we know this is really this is a human pitfall. We tend to observe the world in this way. So they are. I know they are aware of it. That's why I used it as an example. But, well, it can be simple, but it can also be difficult. So what I want you to do now for next week's lecture is that you take this task with you that you can find on the final slide. I'll use some of the previous slides that I skipped in this lecture next time. This is a normal situation. I tend to have difficulties following this strict line. So what I want you to do is to try this operationalization. We have launched, the first one is based on it's quite a typical thing. We want to reduce the general we want to reduce the speeding on highways. And let's say that we have launched a campaign, or let's say attitude. Let's say that what we see here is that an attitude campaign will reduce speeding on highways. That's a pretty straightforward thing. Let's say that. Let's just say now that we have put on posters along the road from here to Lillehammer or something. So how can we measure this? What do we need to operationalize here in order to be able to give a reasonably good answer in this context? That's one of the sayings that I want you to work a little on. And the other one is one that is a lot more complex. And that is, well, meditation makes us into better humans. Try to operationalize that one. What variables, what things in the sentences do we need to operationalize and be specific on? And how can we be specific on them? So try to propose this on these two, let's say, statements. The first statement, attitude campaigns reduces speedings on highways. And the second one is that meditation makes us into better humans. So that's your task for next week. Okay, see you next Wednesday. Thanks.